Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the Book Wars Pod. Today we're talking about Ahsoka, and we're talking about chapters 16 to the end. So it was actually like including a little brief interlude text that was unnumbered. So just make sure you also read that, because we did not cover that last episode.
Actually, just skip over it and just read the rest of the book.
Why? Do you have a lot of feelings about it, Kate?
No.
Okay.
Actually do, but not negative feelings.
Okay. I was going to say,
which
you
one was
read
it? Was it Obi-Wan?
Anakin.
Anakin. Oh,
I was
going
to say, it's anyway. Ambien.
We're going to talk about it. It's fine.
I was going to say, I think we might talk about it on this episode of the Book Wars Pod where we talk about things. Before we do that.
Good Lord. Start.
What are you guys drinking today?
Chris?
Oh, I mean, we're drinking tea because Kate's sick. And we also just got dinner and drinks with friend of the pod, Swara Saleh from the Beltway Banthas.
Yay!
Which is another fantastic podcast that you probably already listen to, but if you don't, you should.
Yeah, Swara's like 60,000 times more famous than us, so yeah.
He lets you guys talk to him anyway, though. It's nice.
I know.
Yeah, right? It's so generous of him.
I know. It's so nice. But yeah, I'm still sick, so if anybody hears any disgusting coughing noises in the background, that's me, and I apologize.
And I'm, like, getting sick, so we all sound great, as usual. We're really in good mental and physical health, as always, on this podcast.
And I'm totally fine.
Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah, Chris, just don't
you
were
not totally
attack.
Fine.
I am about to have a beer that I have not had before, which I think is the first time I'm doing that on the pod. It's by it's probably my second favorite brewery in Oregon. It's called Freem. And I am about to break open it's called Super Saison. So it actually has a cork. I'm going to pop it. There we go. And
yeah, the suspense was just building there.
What?
The suspense was building there.
I know. Well, I like to open what I'm drinking when we're on the pod, because it feels more fun that way.
I mean, it's a really satisfying noise.
It does, especially like the mic really picks up the like cans opening really nicely too. But so I'm actually drinking this at a little bit colder temperature than it's supposed to be served at. But it's, you know, it's a saison, so it's Belgian. And essentially, so what it says on the back is Belgian farmers brewed their strongest beers in winter to be coveted and celebrated at Christmas time. Freem's Super Saison is also coveted for its notes of pineapple, papaya, kiwi, and a flavor you'll celebrate regardless of the occasion. AKA, they put the word super in it because I think it's like 9%. So.
Oh, Lord.
So I should have some, what you're saying, right?
No. And then, so I bought that, and I bought a Belgian blonde. So if I run out of this, that's what I'll be cracking open. Also by Freem. That's one of my favorite beers that they make. I actually came home and I opened the fridge and I was like, oh, shit, I already had a Belgian blonde in here by Freem that I didn't drink yet.
Nice.
So that's pretty funny. But anyway, that's been my brief episode of Beer Talk, where I talk about what I'm drinking for 2 full minutes. But do you guys want to get into some more book talk, since we finished it this week and it was very exciting and good?
Let's do it.
Okay. Let's shall.
I like how that's totally a Cedorism. Let's shall. For the record, let's shall is totally a Cedor familyism that, like, we have said around Kate enough that she has adopted it.
You say it's all the time.
I'm aware of that, yeah.
Chris says it's
really
so
funny.
Much.
Who wrote Bendu before the Bendu? I don't know how to make that point.
Me.
Oh, okay.
Of course
Go
I
ahead,
did.
Kate.
Yeah, I'm leading this discussion because for some reason they let me. Oh, my God.
Ahsoka's your daughter.
Ahsoka is my daughter. All right, so The reason why I brought up the angry space moose is because, obviously, when we're talking about Ahsoka in her later years, we're talking about her identity as being a Force user in the middle. And she, as we can see, honestly, you can see in Rebels too, but in the timeline of the entire saga, she's the first one we really see taking on that identity. I'm not going to fight with people who think Qui-Gon is a great Jedi because I don't have time for that. But the first discussion and question I have to kick us off is how do we see Ahsoka negotiating her new identity as being a Force user in the middle? Because we talked a little bit last time about how Ahsoka, at least in the first half of the book, is kind of floating around trying to figure out who she is. And she finally comes to a point in the second half of the book where she figures it out and it all comes together for her. So just kind of the way she shapes that space for herself in between Jedi and Sith.
Well, I think it's... Nope, started talking before I had a point.
Good job, yeah, white man.
I did not, because I did not have a point.
Good job.
Now I'm just sitting here.
I will add that the kind of the second part of this question is like, how does she embody both the light and the dark sides of the Force?
I found it. I found my point.
Oh my god.
I don't know. It's so that was kind of one of the things I had with this book, and like obviously, we know that Ahsoka is. No. Not a criticism I had, but just a question I had. As Kate gave me, that just shot me some daggers there when she thought I was going to start talking shit. But no, like one kind of question I had, and I've also had this question a little bit in Rebels, when we see Ahsoka in Rebels as Fulcrum. And like we see her and she's very clear that she's not a Jedi. She says that. And she has her white lightsabers and everything. But I don't know. I don't necessarily feel like she's in the middle. She's definitely not a Jedi, but I don't know that that means she's in the middle. She still kind of feels in the light to me. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with Chris, just because you asked that question, Kate, and I go, huh? I don't really see like any dark side characteristics that she's really tapping into. I mean, particularly, I think, you know, some of the... I get what you're saying, obviously, because I think some of the middling stuff that she's really embracing is, like, she doesn't really give a fuck about not forming attachments anymore, right? Like, we kind of hear her say that without really saying it. She's kind of given up, like, that sort of part of the Jedi way. I mean, that's just one example, but... I mean, I think that's where I see her most in, like, the middle, quote, just in that she is a Force user, but she's not necessarily a Jedi, and she's definitely not a Sith, right? And I definitely don't think she's any part of the dark side. I think she's still squarely in the light.
I asked this question, which is a little bit of a red herring, just because, Ahsoka probably is, like I was saying, like the largest example that people hold up about a Force user being in the middle. But I totally agree with you guys. I see her absolutely as being more on the light side, no matter how many times she says, I'm not a Jedi. I'm no Jedi. I need to find a middle road for myself. I actually think that Kanan and Ezra are significantly more towards the middle in terms of Force use than Ahsoka is, which is interesting that we have these kinds of gradations. Like, we keep talking about how there are so many gray areas that the new canon is opening up in Star Wars. There's no longer only Jedi and Sith. Now we have these various shades of gray, various shades of, you know, gray Jedi, whatever you want to call them, which I think is fascinating.
50 Shades of Grey Jedi.
Oh, God. Let's never say that.
That's
again.
An episode title.
Let's never
also,
say that.
Also, this beer is really good, but it is so much. Literally, I understand now. It's funny because, like, now I'm going on another beer tangent, but they usually have, like, really dignified names. They just, like, name the style of their beer. It's, like, Belgian blonde or, like, Belgian style blonde, blah, 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 pumpkin beer. And I'm like, does that say Super Saison? And now I'm like drinking it. And I'm like, yeah, if I was going to name this, that's also what I would name it.
Nice.
Just tastes like somebody put fucking steroids in this Saison. It's just like turned up to 12. Yeah. So thanks, Kate, for that red herring fucking question right away.
Right.
Can you tell I did an English degree, guys?
Right.
Ugh, asshole.
it's interesting because, like, I've always, like, I've had that question in Rebels, too. And, like, I get the artistic choice of making Ahsoka have white lightsabers and, like, I'm and Ahsoka's return to Rebels with her white lightsabers came before this book came out. Is that right?
That's correct,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so it was the Rebels team and Dave Filoni, presumably, who made the aesthetic choice to make her have white lightsabers.
Yes, and he's talked about that in interviews, that it's supposed to symbolize her non-affinity with either Jedi or Sith.
Right. And I get that, but to me it's... I feel like what we've seen a lot of from The Force Awakens, and when what we've seen a lot of, particularly from Rebels, and kind of the new implications of all the weird Force shit that we're seeing in Rebels last season and this season, is that the light side and the dark side can exist and coexist completely independently of the Jedi and the Sith. Like, all Jedi are light side, not all light side are Jedi. And I feel like Ahsoka is very, at least to me, I felt like Ahsoka was very firmly in the light without being a Jedi. Because you look at her, the way she acts, she's still very selfless. And she knows that she's going to, like, she knows that she can't stop being selfless. She knows that she can't stop that about herself, which is why she eventually decides to join the Rebellion. She doesn't, you know, fight with excess emotion the way dark side users do. She doesn't, she still allows the Force to flow through her rather than using the Force to fight the way dark side users do. Or rather, she still fights the way light side users do rather than the way dark side users do. Syntax is hard. But I don't know. I just didn't get any middle vibes from her the way that I do from, for example, Kanan. Or, honestly, the way that I do from Luke in Return of the Jedi.
Interesting. Kate, did you have a point, or can I make another quick one?
You can make a quick one.
You're permitted. Okay.
I have a point, but I'll be talking for, like, you, 3 minutes.
You have 15 seconds, Kristen. Use them wisely.
Oh, my God.
Okay. No, I mean, just while you were talking, Chris, obviously not while I was reading the outline, because I didn't, but it just kind of, like, popped into my head. It's, like, when we, on the onset of Star Wars, it was very, like, Jedi and Sith, good versus evil. That is what we're dealing with right now. And with The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi coming out, and especially with Rebels, we talk about this a lot and how the books really flesh out the gray area, and that's part of why we all like them so much, because it shows this, like, complicated side to Star Wars where, you know, like, decisions aren't black and white. But it just kind of makes me think of, like, the opposite of a Jedi is not necessarily a Sith, right? The opposite of the light side is not necessarily the dark side. I mean, that one more seems like they are opposites, but at the same time, we're making all the space in the middle for whatever. I mean, I think Luke's gonna tell us a little bit more about that in The Last Jedi, but it just kind of makes me think, like, those were so conflated, you know, the Jedi with the light side and the Sith and the dark side in the first, like, two trilogies, right? And now it's complicated.
Yeah, totally. Like, I don't know. I feel like as we've learned more about, like, all the weird Force shit and everybody's different affiliations, and presumably we're going to get a lot more of this in Last Jedi, like, I feel like my view of the Force and affiliations to the Force has gone from your kind of traditional, like, line where there's the light side on one side and the dark side on the other side. I'm making hand gestures right now, which only Kate can see, so I know it's very helpful. But, like, you have, like, kind of a line where it's the light side on one side and the dark side on the other side. And it's, like, the traditional view. That's the original trilogy view. It's certainly the prequel trilogy view. But I feel like now we're looking more at the very least, like, three points of a triangle where balance is not just the middle, but it is neither light nor dark. And so you have these multiple, like, you have multiple dimensions and multiple options where it's not just one spectrum that you're looking at. And I feel like Ahsoka is a reflection of that, where she can be very much in the light without being on the Jedi's part of this spectrum, but still, like, but not necessarily be in the middle either.
Right. I think you're speaking to what my follow-up question, I guess, was going to be, which is what is, you know, Ahsoka's model of a Force user mean for the future of the Force? And we talked a little bit about this when we talked about the Kanan comics in episode 19. I think that from the Jedi to Ahsoka to Kanan to Luke to the Sith, we get this really interesting gradation of what it means to be a Force user. Not that I'm saying that Luke is more toward the Sith side. This is not necessarily an evenly distributed number line, if you will. But Ahsoka, I would say, is a Rey Force user closest to the light side that we've seen. Kanan is a little bit farther away from that, you know, because he really deeply feels that he doesn't need to worry about attachments or anything like that, obviously, with his romance with Hera and his connections to, you know, his found family and all of that. And then we come to Luke, who you may remember, if you were following along when we were live tweeting Return of the Jedi during our Star Wars movie marathon, Carrie Fishmas. We talked a little bit about during our live tweet about how Luke is the only Force user who calls himself a Jedi that we've seen who actually like Force chokes people. And he fights with his emotions, right? I mean, Chris can probably speak a little more eloquently about this because he is a little more steeped in the Star Wars lore, but it's just, it's interesting how Luke, calls himself a Jedi and the original trilogy already positions him as a Force user in the middle who can still call himself a Jedi.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Luke, and I don't know that I've ever said this on the podcast, but I've long been of the opinion that Luke is not pure light side. And I feel like there's, you know, whether intentional or not, a lot of evidence for that in the films. You look at the fact that in The Empire Strikes Back, he's completely motivated by emotion and by wanting to defeat Vader and save his friends, and not, you know, grandiose feelings of justice and peace in the galaxy. He is going to save his friends who he is attached to, and he is emotionally invested in that fight and wants to learn the Force so that he can beat Vader. And to me, that's very, I mean, certainly it's very un-Jedi-like, but also very, like, it's very in the middle. And then, as Kate said, you see him force-choking the Gamorrean guards when he enters Jabba's palace. You see him, the way he finally beats Vader, you know, beating him in the lightsaber battle, of course, not the eventual redemption. But the way he beats Vader in a lightsaber battle is he gets angry because he is afraid that Vader is going to go after Leia, and he gets angry. And he lets his emotion and his rage fuel him, and he chops Vader's arm off.
Yep. I was just going to say, like, more than anything else, we see it in him not listening to Yoda. Like, obviously, you brought that point up, and he's, like, acting out of emotion around that and attachment. But it's just, like, everybody listens to Yoda. You're supposed to listen to Yoda.
Yeah, no, except for Luke, and he's just like, I'm just gonna fuck off to Bespin, bye.
Bye. I fucked off here, I can fuck off here again.
Like, I'm so interested to see what they're gonna do with Luke in The Last Jedi, because, you know, obviously we recently watched Empire Strikes Back, and you see all of Yoda's fears, and you see him scolding Luke, control, you must learn control. We have no evidence that suggests that Luke ever learned that control. Like, there's no evidence in Return of the Jedi that he had that control. Like, he was calm, cool, and collected in Jabba's palace and on the sand barge. Fine. Like, that's whatever.
Yeah, I always attribute that more to his age, like him growing up from being a whiny farm boy, than his Jedi training, honestly.
I agree with that. And also, like, I feel like it's easier to be in control when you're not facing, like, opposing Force users, mm-hmm. too. Because, so, like, it's interesting because we, you know, kind of just to sum up and hopefully maybe get us back on track, but like, we have this popularly accepted view in the canon of Luke is pure light side. Luke is the Ubermensch. Luke is everything.
Just call him the Ubermensch.
I did.
Jesus.
Luke is, well, I mean, he is, though. He's everything.
No, I know.
I know he is.
Everything all blonde white male children want to be.
God, why aren't I drinking right now?
And also, before you flood our mentions, I don't dislike Luke. I love Luke. I think he's a fascinating character, and I'm so excited to see where he goes in Last Jedi. I'm just, like, looking at this from a story standpoint. But, like, I don't know. To me, I never really bought that Luke was as good, objectively good, as we were supposed to believe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I already shit-talked the redemption arc, like, 20 episodes ago, so.
It's not a bad thing. Yeah. Like, that's really legit.
I know. And so, like, kind of to bring it back to Ahsoka. Sorry.
No.
Oh, okay.
I want to see what you do with this. Go.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of, like, to bring it back to Ahsoka, I feel like this model of what a new Force user is, like, is not just that she is neither Jedi nor Sith, but that, like, you can contain multitudes as a Force user. You don't have to pick one. You don't even necessarily have to pick light side or dark. You can pick, you know, the balance that's, you know, both of those and either of them, as we see from Bendu. Because Bendu, I wouldn't say, is either of those. I wouldn't say he's, like, a mix of dark and light. I would say he's completely independent.
Hmm.
Yeah. And also very scary.
And also the biggest, angriest space moose.
It's true.
Nice.
All right. That was good, Chris. You did a good job bringing it back.
I know.
We were all waiting.
Yay.
I mean, if you let me talk long enough, I will eventually find my point.
This is very true of you. This is, yes. All right. Shall we move, slightly switch gears?
Yeah, let's do it. Bit?
All right. So we've just talked about, obviously, lots of weird Force shit, but also, you know, obviously Ahsoka, the Force wielding part of herself, but also, of course, a significant part of this book is her becoming a rebel, joining the rebellion, becoming one of the, honestly, one of the founding members of the Rebel Alliance. She's a significant cornerstone of, you know, the campaign to overthrow the Empire. So I just want to talk a little bit about that kind of grounded part of her, that gritty rebel part of her in becoming Fulcrum. So my first question is, what do you guys see as being the key moments that push Ahsoka towards becoming Fulcrum, and how do the experiences that she has in the novel shape who she becomes in Rebels?
When you're asking for the key moments of her becoming Fulcrum, do you mean in this book or do you mean in her life?
I mean in the book, but if you want to talk about it in her life, like, fucking go for it.
I mean, to me, I felt like, sorry, I've been talking a lot. I know, I'm aware of this, so I'm gonna,
we should have put, like, the how long has a man been talking time around this.
Yeah. No, totally. I'm very aware of this, and so I'm gonna shut up after I make this point. I feel like, to me, the key moment, and this is, like, once we say that we're gonna go out of this book, I feel like this is the low hanging fruit that I'm just gonna pluck here. But it's Barriss's betrayal.
That's the lowest fruit.
Yeah, no, exactly. I am nothing if not a stereotypical white man, Kate.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna pick the easiest idea and claim it as my own and original. But you have her betrayed by the Jedi and betrayed by Barriss as well. But this institution that she has lived with for her whole life has betrayed her, and she still knows that she is a good individual, a good, you know, if we're going to use person as a non-human definer, a good person. Like, as we, you know, just talked about, we still think that she's light side, but she's very clearly not a Jedi anymore. And I feel like that's kind of the most defining moment.
Yeah, the really interesting part about that is that, you know, she could have turned into someone like Jyn or Kanan, who decided, you know, to decide that the Jedi had abandoned her, so, and the Republic became the Empire, and she didn't give a flying fuck because the Jedi fucked her over anyway. But she didn't do that. She never becomes that person, you know. She always feels compelled to seek justice. Like she said, she was trained for justice, and that's in her blood now, and she just can't get it out of her. I mean, Kanan was trained for justice and he decided to go boozing and whoring for however many years. Like, that's a good point.
Interesting. Sorry, I'm just kind of taking this in because I don't know that I have a great... I don't know. It seems like in Ahsoka's world, there are many timelines happening at once within her. So I think, you know, as we talked about last week, she's definitely doing a lot of, like, healing and thinking and meditating and trying to understand where she fits into this whole thing. And I think kind of the biggest turning point, in my opinion, is, like, her decision and desire to keep tapping into the Force. Like, that's how she knew she would be able to get the kyber crystals out of the what are they called?
The Inquisitor.
Thank you. It's like it's a stupid name. I mean, that's how she knew she was gonna get the kyber crystals out of the Inquisitor's, like, lightsaber. I think it's just, like, when she decided that she was going to... I think she's letting the Force guide her. I guess that's kind of my, like, hot take. It's not really a hot take because I think that's what she's doing, but...
No, I think that's exactly right.
Like, her trusting in the Force is what, it, like, just clearly laid the path out for her to become Fulcrum.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, like I was just saying, we see Kanan, you know, he feels the Force all the time and he, like, literally... takes, like, devotes effort to suppressing those urges. Ahsoka never does that, and I think that's significant. I mean, she's just a magnet for problems, like all Jedi seem to be, and instead of, you know, ignoring them like Kanan does, she decides to go on all these mercy missions. She's just like, the Jedi aren't here to give me humanitarian missions anymore, so I'm just gonna do them by myself, which is hysterical. But also, you know, it's very key to her character, and that she was able to maintain that mindset even, you know, leaving the Jedi Order after Order 66, seeing the rise of the Empire. I think that's super, super significant.
I have a question that I just thought of as we were talking about that.
Mm.
Do you all think that the fact that Anakin and Ahsoka, particularly Anakin, but also Ahsoka, came to the Jedi a little later than Jedi children are usually started training? Because, like, Ahsoka's old enough to remember before the Jedi came for her, because there was that incident with the slaver that we were talking about that, like, tried to enslave her. Do you think that the Jedi that were trained more or less from birth take the Force for granted?
Oh my god.
Because, like, and again, this works a little better for Anakin than it does for Ahsoka, but their connection to the Force just always feels so much deeper. And I kind of wonder if that's because they remember a time when they didn't have this control over the Force and they didn't know what it was and they didn't know what was happening to them.
Hmm. See, I never saw Ahsoka as coming to the Jedi later in life. Like, it seems like she was around the right age, because I think... Hidal Afardi seems to be about 5 or 6, and Ahsoka says she's about a year or two old to have joined up with the Jedi, and I think Ahsoka was like 3 or 4.
Oh, was she that young?
Yeah, and like, we don't, this is getting really
a little sketchy, yeah.
This is getting kind of nitpicky, but we don't really know enough about Togruta biology to know how far back they can remember compared to humans. So
honestly, that's a great point that I didn't even think of. So. All right. That's fair.
Cool.
That's fair. I don't know. I was just kind of thinking, like, I feel like when you look at Kanan, because, you know, we spent a lot of time last episode comparing Kanan and Ahsoka. Kanan spends a lot of his time trying to get away from the Force. And we talked about that in A New Dawn. And we've talked about it in Rebels, too, frankly. And in the Kanan comics. But Ahsoka, even when she's not using the Force, never tries to get away from it. Hmm. You know, she's trying to not be stupid and protect herself, but she's never trying to, like, remove the Force from her life. And I'm just I don't know. I'm trying to think about why they had those differing reactions and why their relationship to the Force was different.
I think for me, it's just who Ahsoka is, because we have what, 3 models now of Force users who came to the Jedi really late in life. So that's Anakin, Ezra, and Luke,
And Rey.
Oh, and Rey, duh. Well, we don't know enough about that, obviously.
That's true, yeah. But no, yeah, point taken.
Right, I mean, I think your point about Anakin is right, but, and I don't think we know enough about Ezra, because he's never had to kind of sock the Force away, because, you know, by the time he realizes what it means, that he can do all this weird shit, he's just, you know, on his path. But I wouldn't say, like, Luke, who, again, came to the Jedi really fucking late, I don't think he's trying to push the Force away. Like, he's in exile, but he's at the first Jedi temple. I don't think that's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of my bigger points last week when we were comparing Ahsoka and Kanan. I kind of, like, feel like I repeated it about 20 times, but I talked about how, like, Ahsoka has, like, a much more nuanced understanding of Order 66 than Kanan does. And I think, like, the immediate aftermath of orders, you know, right after Order 66, I think, you know, both of those, you know, both of those things are very evident. I think, I mean, I'm not caught up with Rebels all the way right this second, as you guys know, and as Kate, like, glares at me through the microphone. But
you know what?
But I think, like, we're seeing, especially, like, since coming into contact with the Bendu, we're seeing Kanan, like, turn to the Force a lot more, right? Just spending, like, more time in the Force and tapped into the Force and meditating and stuff like that. That was just my thought, was that we've seen him change a lot, right?
Right, but I think your point about that you made last time that I think you're getting at this time is the question of Kanan versus Ahsoka's emotional maturity at the time of Order 66 being significant in... you know, how they treat the Force afterward. I think that's important. And you repeated it a million times because it's important and I think it's right.
Yeah,
totally. I seconded. I do think that it's entirely probable that I'm reading things into this that are not there, and it really can be attributed to the relationship between Anakin and Ahsoka being far more like older brother, younger sister, whereas Depa was really... not quite a mother figure, but close to Kanan, because she was older and he was younger. Like, she was older than Anakin and he was younger than Ahsoka.
Yeah, I think, I don't think my point was disagreeing with you though, Chris, when I was talking about how, like, they, both Kanan and Ahsoka now spend a lot of time, like, quote unquote, in the Force. I guess I just kind of mean, like, meditating and, like, trusting the Force and focusing on the Force. But I think... my point was kind of that's why we see Ahsoka so being so strong with the Force is, you know, she's trying to be, right? It's very, like, deliberate. And we know Anakin has, like, a trillion million more midichlorians for some reason. Whatever. Whether
the
or
most
not that's
midichlorians,
a stupid...
the best midichlorians, many people say.
Oh, my
that's
God.
Right. Bigly midichlorians. Anyway, but I mean, I think that we're supposed to think that that's definitely part of it, right? It's like he is so resonant with the Force because of that. But also, I think it's interesting because I think it just, there can be different kind of ends to the same, or different, the same ends to different kind of means. Like, I think we see Luke and Anakin being really strong in the Force, just in that they, like, use it to add meaning to parts of their lives that are already there, whereas Ahsoka, like, uses it to guide her towards what should be meaningful in her life, if that distinction makes
like
any
that.
Fucking sense.
It absolutely does.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just mean, like, sorry, can I just, like, can I say that in a less confusing way?
Oh,
really
please.
Quick, and then you can side note. I guess I just mean Anakin, both Anakin and Luke, we see, even though Luke is kind of, like, a a blank slate by the time that Opie finds him and they start doing stuff. He's very much a blank slate, but then he really forms like attachment to all of these new things in his life. And then I think he uses the Force to like find deeper meaning in those things. Whereas, and same with Anakin. Anakin has a life already, right? And then he starts meeting people who he really connects with. And then I think he's using the Force to try to find meaning in those things, or find deeper meaning in those things. Whereas Ahsoka is like, I am going to let the Force guide me to what relationships and what I should be doing and what I should be pursuing. But yep, then they're all still strong with the Force though, right? Like that's what I mean. Similarly strong with the Force.
No, that is exactly what I was saying, and you said it much better than I did.
So yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Also, my side note was just yeah, it was. No, my side note was just that you used the phrase resonant with the Force, and I love that phrase and I want us to use it more because it's just so perfect.
Ooh. Oh, good. I like that.
As we know more about kyber crystals, and specifically in this book about how they like how they resonate, how they sing.
I love.
There's so much lightsaber lore in this book.
It's so good.
I love it so much.
I know, same. I also just want to add, like, you're contrasting the way Ahsoka uses the Force and the way that Luke and Anakin both use the Force. I want to say that Kanan's a mix of both of them.
I think that's right.
Go back to our spectrum of Force users.
Yeah, I don't think he's always been. I think we've made that point too. Kind of just by saying that he's like changing and the relationship he has with the Force. You know, he hates it, quote unquote. He doesn't hate it, but you know, he has a very negative relationship with it. And then he starts kind of like embracing it again. But I think he's doing, you know, in the first 1 to 2 seasons of Rebels, we see him embracing it in that very like Anakin Luke way. And now we're seeing him moving towards kind of like what I'm calling the Ahsoka way, where like he's tapping into the Force to guide him. But I think he's still like, he has so many attachments that he like needs both of those things to really be who he is.
Sorry, I'm talking about Kanan so much, but he's going to die and I'm going to claw my face off. And it's like, I just, anyway.
It's fine. We can talk about him as much as we want. Also, they're like, he is a great kind of comparison point to Ahsoka.
That's true,
too. And he's one of the only ones we have, so we get to use him as much as we want.
Yeah, no, he's a natural comparison point for many reasons, sure, as we've gone into.
Sure. So I'm going to move us along, if y'all don't mind. But we started talking a little about Anakin, because you can't talk about Star Wars without talking about the Skywalker trash fire.
In a few years, that may not be true. You may be able to talk a lot about Star Wars without talking about the Skywalker saga.
Ryan Johnson.
Sorry, we're not a news podcast. We're recording this on Thursday the 9th. 9th?
Yeah.
So we're recording this on Thursday the 9th, about 6 hours after the Ryan Johnson news came out, and we're all very excited. Now we're done. We can move on.
Yes.
Super excited.
So you can't really, like I just said, you can't talk about Star Wars right now without talking about the Skywalkers, but you really can't talk about Ahsoka, especially immediately in the aftermath of Order 66, without talking about Anakin. So this book really delves a lot into the way that Anakin is connected to Ahsoka, but also a million billion other events in the Star Wars universe. The first one being, that I want to talk about anyway, is that in the interlude between chapters 15 and 16, that one focuses on Anakin, and he asks himself what would have happened if Qui-Gon had lived. And he doesn't really answer that question for himself, because he's probably asked himself that question a million times and has decided that like it's not worth the emotional energy to dwell on. But I just want to ask you guys, what would have happened if Qui-Gon had lived and trained Anakin instead of Obi-Wan?
Jesus.
Oh, God. So many things. Also, I want to preface this by saying there's actually a decent amount of canon kind of lore about Anakin and Obi-Wan wrestling with this question. There's in the Obi-Wan and Anakin Marvel comic miniseries, they delve a little bit into this. Also in From a Certain Point of View, which we're reading very soon, Claudia Gray's story, Master and Apprentice. I won't get into it here, but it is written from Qui-Gon's perspective, and it talks explicitly about this. So I want us to,
my God.
Which is just to say, let's have this conversation, but I want us to then revisit this.
I'm going to scream. All right, great.
I mean, I think obviously Qui-Gon would not have put up with Anakin's fuck shit the way that Obi-Wan does.
I feel like one thing that Qui-Gon saying. Would have done is in a very, kind of like as we talked about with Ahsoka, how she jumped off the linear spectrum of Jedi versus Sith. I feel like I mean, honestly, like we've talked a lot about the choice versus the Force and destiny.
I was about to go into that, so I'm glad you are.
So, like, who knows if Anakin still would have become Darth Vader and still would have been corrupted. But I do feel like Qui-Gon would have shown him that there are other alternatives.
Right. Because, I mean, I was about to say my comment was going to be, if all is as the Force wills it, and Anakin was supposed to go bad to come back to the light and then bring everything to balance, I don't know. But, I mean, of course, there's that whole discourse around, you know, Qui-Gon is the first gray Jedi, you know, and like obviously who's a very unorthodox Jedi. We know that from, like, I was going to say textual evidence, but we know that from Phantom Menace, because Obi-Wan's just like, why are you always trying to, like, go to the council and give them the middle finger, you know? So, I don't know. It's one of those really interesting speculation questions that are probably never going to get answered because, you know, paths have been chosen, whatever, but I like that was inserted into this book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's put a pin in it for now, just because, like, I want more information, and Chris says there's more information from a certain point of view, which I'm now, like side-eyeing from my seat, because it's, like, on a table, like,
nice.
4 feet from where I'm sitting, and I'm like, what secrets do you hold?
I mean, side note, Miara is in From a Certain Point of View, so we get to see her again.
Woo. Oh, that's who she is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I love that.
I know. Isn't it great?
That makes me happy.
Yeah.
Chris, did you finish the whole thing yet?
No, I was reading it in between books, and then we started reading, I guess, Ahsoka. And so I ran out of time, so I'm only about a third of the way through.
And you also had a heart attack.
And I also did not have a heart attack.
We're all dying.
You basically had a heart attack.
One small note that is in no way related to Ahsoka, that I think I feel pretty definitive about this. I wonder if you all agree. If Qui-Gon had lived and if Qui-Gon had trained Anakin, Obi-Wan would not be as strong a Jedi.
Ooh. Oh, shit. That's a hot take. I gotta sit on that.
All right. We can come back to it and talk about it when it's actually relevant to anything we're discussing.
I want to punch you in the face because that was the hottest of hot takes. Oh, my God.
When has that ever stopped us?
Right?
It should stop us now, but continue.
It being relevant or punch me in the face, because either one really, like,
oh,
fair.
Yeah.
Not even because I disagree with you that I want to punch you in the face. I just want to. Oh, my God. All right, we're putting a pin in this before I start doing bodily harm to my husband. aside from Anakin obviously directly affecting events, he went and procreated. So there's a lot to do with Bail and Leia in this book. And we see a little bit.
He like of double
Leia
procreated.
And we see a lot of Bail's relationship with Leia, which, first of all, because I'm so excited to read Leia, Princess of Alderaan, when they do a reprint and get rid of the fucking Nazi slogan that's in it, sometime next year, probably. But also, you know, just talking a little bit about what's revealed about Bail and Leia's relationship. That's a really hard phrase to say. But also, how much do we think Ahsoka knew about Anakin and Padme's relationship? Like, she obviously doesn't know that Padme went and pooped out two babies, but, like, aside from that, how much do we think she knew?
I think she knew. She's not fucking stupid. Sorry.
Looking at the idea that Obi-Wan knew, which it's, I think, pretty clear that Obi-Wan knew.
Like, the whole time?
I think Obi-Wan knew most of the time. At least most of the Clone Wars. Most of during the Clone Wars.
Okay, yeah, I can buy that, having watched the cartoon, yeah.
I think if we're assuming that Obi-Wan knew, we have to also assume that Ahsoka knew.
Okay.
Just because, just looking at their various interactions with the characters and looking at their relationship with both Anakin and Padme individually and together.
That said, I don't think Obi told her.
Oh, no.
I think she just knows.
I totally agree with that. I think Obi-Wan told no one.
And I think Obi assumes she doesn't know wrongfully.
I think that too.
I also agree with that because... one thing that is constantly true in Star Wars is Obi-Wan does not know as much as he thinks he does.
God damn it.
Or just, like, other people are smarter than Obi-Wan fucking thinks they are.
Yes.
People continue to... He continues to underestimate everything.
Oh, God. That is so fucking true.
God, I feel like we're just, like, shitting on original trilogy heroes today. Sorry, everyone.
We're not sorry.
Speaking of shitting on original trilogy heroes, as an aside, I finally got my fucking Jedi box today as I texted you guys. There was a whole thing.
We all got our
bounty because we're extra as fuck. But we did not discuss, because I hadn't gotten it yet, how much the young Obi Funko looks like Anakin just, like, did something really stupid.
Right.
He's so unhappy. I, like, pulled him out and I was like, oh, God, he's so displeased.
He's very grumpy. Wait, Keeks, does your Aayla Secura pop have
the wrong color stomach? Yes. Stomach? Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God, really?
That's so funny.
It's the wrong color.
Oh. You haven't seen the Aayla Secura Funko that came with the Smuggler's Bounty from, what was it?
A fucking month ago.
September? Yeah, sure. So instead of her midriff being blue like it's supposed to be, it's brown like her clothes. So she just looks like she's wearing like a bodysuit or something.
And it's really funny because it's correct in the picture. And then you like look at
the
Funko and you look at her and you're like, yeah, no, this is not right.
No, it's fucking hysterical. Like, Chris and I were like looking at it and we're like, wait a minute.
I can't decide like what's funnier, if like their entire like QA process like went through and didn't notice this, or if they just printed a bunch of them, opened the box, looked at it. Fuck. You think anybody's gonna notice?
Whatever.
And then and to that I say, guys, it's the Star Wars fandom. Of course we noticed.
We know.
We noticed things that aren't even legitimate. And that one's pretty big.
Yep.
My usual disclaimer that Quinn's probably gonna Kool-Aid man in the door at any moment. Because he's coming home from work, so
that's fine.
I don't know. Do we have other thoughts on how much Ahsoka knew about Anakin and Padme's relationship? I honestly feel like she knew.
I don't know. I just wanted to ask you guys because we don't actually ever get from Ahsoka's point of view like a definitive of her being like, oh yeah, I knew. But when Bail is talking to her, he's like, she must have known, even if she didn't know about the kids. Like, all we ever get is other people being like, oh, Ahsoka probably knew. And, like, we think Ahsoka probably knew, but she never says, yeah, they were fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to know more of, like, Ahsoka's thoughts about Anakin. I just do. We're not going to get them, but.
Yeah, kind of a more, yeah.
I mean, we had a pretty complete picture of how much she idolized him and how much she values friendship, but like you were saying, the nuanced portrait of him, and if she even saw what his flaws were, that would be really interesting to me. Sure.
Well, yeah. Right, and like who could blame her? Like she's his Padawan. Like she's not supposed to be a nitpicker.
Sure.
Reduce that to a nitpicking thing, but anyway, Chris, go.
I was just going to say, also the fact that in this book, she brings up the fact that she knows that R2 used to be Padme's and was given to Anakin. Which is a very small but very significant detail that a lot of people overlook.
See, I definitely registered that, but then I was like, oh, how did you know that, though? Oh, fuck me.
I think we forget, like, Ahsoka talks to Padme to Ahsoka a lot in Clones and Rebels. Not Rebels. Because she's... Okay, doesn't matter.
Clone Wars.
Yes, the Clone Wars is what I'm talking about. Like, Padme and Ahsoka, like, kind of have a lot of talking time, like, face-to-face time without anybody, like, around.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, we see that even in the Forces of Destiny shorts that are
coming out. I was going to say, Forces of Destiny has really leaned on that in a really great way.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, so we've been talking for a little while now, so I think we can wrap it up with just one last point that we want to talk about of the messy web of Anakin Skywalker, as you put on the outline here.
Can I just take screenshots of the outlines I put together for these two episodes? Because they're a hot mess.
We should just, like, post our outlines. Whenever we do a Patreon,
they're very funny.
And yeah, I don't read them, so.
I know. Our listeners can have one up on Kristen.
Oh my god. Yeah, if we ever monetize, we should post the outlines early. So that you can be like, like Kristen and read the outline.
Yeah.
Read
the outline.
Oh, that'd be funny.
We talk about it.
Anyway.
Oh, that'd be hilarious.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've talked about Anakin. We've talked about Padme. We've talked about Bail and Leia a little bit. We haven't talked about Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan crying in the desert, as the outline says. So what we get of Obi-Wan besides Ahsoka talking about him a little bit is the interlude after Anakin's. We see him on Tatooine doing a lot of really deep meditation, trying to do the training that Yoda assigned to him to be able to communicate with Qui-Gon. And of course, eventually he attains the ability to become a Force ghost, whatever. I don't know. I just wanted to talk a little bit about how that was connected to Ahsoka and how that's connected to Anakin and what all that mess is.
One thing that I got from this book was a really strong implication that there is a time in this book when Ahsoka wishes that she could be Obi-Wan.
Ooh, say more.
Because not specifically Obi-Wan, but she is like lamenting her need to save
people. I was
going to
say, does anybody wish they were Obi-Wan? Sorry.
Yeah. Oh my.
Obi-Wan sure doesn't.
Oh, fuck. The eternal sadness of Obi-Wan.
But no, because like you have her when she's like talking about she's putting her friends in danger and, you know, she can't live to see them die again. But then she kind of comes back around and decides to join the rebellion. Like, that's a huge split from Obi-Wan. And like, there's a couple different ways you can view it. You can view it from Ahsoka being more compassionate and being able to do more. You can view it from Obi-Wan having a stronger sense of what his mission is. And to be fair, Ahsoka didn't have the same mission. But I don't know. I saw those two paths as very divergent from, you know, coming from the same source of Ahsoka and Obi-Wan being so close. And then you have Ahsoka actively deciding that her path cannot be to just go into exile anymore because that's failing her. And Obi-Wan and Bail talking, we get most of this through Bail's eyes because Obi-Wan isn't in this book except in one excerpt. But Bail talking about how Obi-Wan's path is to be alone and Bail can't send for him, even when there's a Jedi on the loose that he wants help finding. And as much of a hard time as Bail is having, he is like, I would rather be me than Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan's path is to be forever alone. See, here's my question, though. The one exception, I think, to that, let's call it rule about Obi-Wan and his decision-making patterns is him going to Mandalore and the Lawless to try to save Satine. Because he knew it was a trap and he decided to go anyway because he was in love with her. So what do you make of that?
Explain that again.
So, I think the one, like, you know, because Obi-Wan usually he'll, you know, if he knows that it's not serving the larger mission, he'll just, like, excise, you know, tasks or missions or whatever the fuck from his agenda, for lack of better terms. But the one exception to that, in my mind, is that the episode from season 5, The Lawless, where, spoiler alert, Satine dies, where he goes to Mandalore to try to rescue her, even though he knows it's a trap and it's not really going to help anything.
Gotcha.
Because Mandalore has already decided that they're not going to be in the war. They're not going to be allies anyway. Like, it doesn't matter if he saves her or not, really.
Oh, no. You're totally right. Sorry if I was unclear. I meant specifically their post-Order 66 paths
diverged. Oh, just kidding.
Yeah. No, I mean, your point was absolutely right. I didn't make mine well enough. I'm specifically talking about their role in the post-Jedi world, essentially. The post-Order 66 world, where Ahsoka decides that she cannot forsake people, and Anakin and Obi-Wan decides he has to.
Well, here's where I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because okay. Ahsoka seems like, when Ahsoka thinks about exile, she thinks of it, I think, as being a passive exile, like she's just going to stop. Mm-hmm. Obi-Wan's is a little more active, like he has things he has to do. He has to learn how to communicate with Qui-Gon, and he has to watch over Luke. Like, he's not just literally sitting in the desert with a thumb up his ass, you know?
He's not.
That's an excellent point.
Sorry, I'm just over here laughing at myself. I mean,
they still haven't made an Obi-Wan movie. We don't know.
I feel like you didn't talk this episode. No, I feel really bad.
I said a bunch of smart prophetic shit about Ahsoka and her relationship with the Force versus.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm a quality over quantity gal when I need to be. I'm just kidding. I just say whatever the fuck I want, and I don't read the outline before the episodes. It's fine.
It works.
I mean, you guys just know. I mean, Kate knows that, like, I fucking loved this book. And I'm sure I'm going to have more to talk about on the wrap up, because I'm just going to have feelings about how much I fucking love this book.
I just want to make one more point about Obi-Wan before we close out the episode. And it's that when I was reading this book, I found it really interesting in that Obi-Wan interlude that no matter how deep he goes into the Force and how deep he goes into meditation, he can communicate with the dead, but he can't sense other Jedi in the galaxy. And that was absolutely fascinating to me. Like, I know the entirety of Rebels fandom and Canary Shippers are grasping at straws trying to, like, you know, pray to Force Jesus that Kanan's going to survive. And, you know, somewhere over or yonder where Obi-Wan and Yoda don't know where he is. And so they assume that Luke and Leia are the last, you know, hope for the rebellion. But I don't know. I just thought it was interesting.
Well, how do we know he can't sense other Force users, though?
He says that.
Oh, well, how do we know he doesn't learn, though? Because the Obi-Wan interlude is still, my impression, fairly early in his exile.
Don't crush my dreams.
I don't know, because, like, I mean, it's very possible he can't because he's not looking for them. That's certainly right. Possible.
To I mean, me, Ahsoka I feel like can't either, and she is looking for them.
Ahsoka can't. Well, that's true. Ahsoka doesn't commune with the dead, though. Ahsoka isn't as deep in the Force as Obi-Wan is at this stage.
I was going to say, like, how do you know how... Well, we don't know how strong she gets by the time she shows up in Rebels. I mean, she's obviously, like, ridiculously super strong. She probably would have been on there.
But we also, in Rebels, don't get her point of view as much.
Well, I know, because, you know, storytelling reasons. Yeah. But I would argue that how powerful Ahsoka is by the time we get to Rebels, if she'd still been in the Order, and if the Order still existed, she'd be on the Council by now.
Hmm.
I don't necessarily think that's wrong.
Was that your way of saying she's right, Chris? But anyway, sorry. I love it. White I love it when people, people use like quadruple negatives to say someone's right.
White people.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, the only thing I'll say about that is I very much think the jury is still out if Obi-Wan can't sense other Force users or if he can and is ignoring them, because that's part of
the thing. I was going to say, he might eat me. He might have to. Because that might be the best, safest thing for him to do. And like, what
have to sense them or have to ignore them?
Have to ignore them.
Yeah.
To focus. Yeah.
Because he knows about Kanan and Ezra. in Twin Sons in Rebels.
Like, oh, the first God, thing, he just broke my...
The first thing he says to Ezra is, you're in the wrong place.
Hmm. Yeah.
God, Jesus, you're so right about that. Now I'm angry. All right, just take what I just said and, like,
no,
throw it
it's still valid,
the
though.
Fire of me crying about Kinnear. Never mind.
Though. Also, like, Obi-Wan's crying in the desert because like he hates sand, just like Anakin.
That's... Everyone hates sand.
Of course.
That seems like the best place for us to wrap this up. with Angry Kate and with sand. So, for now...
Now we all have the giggles because like, I had to bring up sand again.
So, for our next episode, as we mentioned, we are going to be doing our wrap-up episode for Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston. And then two episodes from now, as you know, if you've been listening to us for a while, we like to give you a little bit of notice to pick up the next book. And we are back to the comics. We are going back to the Marvel, Star Wars, and Darth Vader comics of the last few years with Volume 2 of each one. So that's Star Wars Volume 2. Star Wars Volume 2, Showdown on the Smuggler's Moon. And that's issues 8 through 12. And Darth Vader Volume 2, Shadows and Secrets, which is issues 7 through 12.
And that's the 2015 version of Darth Vader, right?
Correct. Always need to clarify because comics have the same names over the years.
And Star Wars is terrible, and Lucasfilm is terrible at naming things. Twist.
Naming conventions are not always their strong suit. And with that, that is our show. Thank you, as always, so much for listening and for communicating with us, being a part of the Star Wars community. Hit us up on Twitter, on Instagram, on Tumblr, at Book Wars Pod on all those. Book Wars Pod on our new Facebook page that Kristen is doing an amazing job of running.
Thanks, Kiki.
I don't understand Facebook, so if you're a baby boomer and you can help me, please just DM me on Twitter because I don't know how to use Facebook.
Oh, my fucking God.
Baby boomers definitely can't help you.
Baby boomers know more about Facebook than I know about anything in my life. They know how to create colorful statuses.
You can ask your dad.
Oh my God, my dad, he's so good at Facebook. He has such a following.
That's weird. Anyway, bookwarspod@gmail.com on email. Rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. We have enough reviews that we actually have an iTunes rating at this point, which is very exciting.
It's 5.0, so don't fuck it up, guys.
Only give us feedback if it's good feedback. No, we're totally kidding.
We're actually kidding. If you have real criticisms, please sling them at us.
Yeah.
In a helpful, constructive, not shitty way, just to subtweet a little bit.
Yep. Exactly. And our, just to bring us home, our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. Kate is screaming into the couch right now. Kristen is giggling in the background. I am Chris. For all three of us, thank you very much for listening to our discussion of Ahsoka.
I'm gonna edit this out. I'm gonna edit this out. Is Hamlet awake? Oh, he's been, I mean, that's the usual, but it's just even more right now. That makes sense. Oh. I would like to also do that. What a cutie. That's amazing. Oh. He's such a little flat boy. Oh my God.